Welcome to Take the Red Pill,
where we explore the realities within our reality.
We are your hosts, David Deere
and Donald Dalton.
This episode, Donald has an interesting idea of for a topic here. It's really going to be based around life and death. And yes, we actually did cover the afterlife in a previous episode, but we're going to kind of take a little bit of a deeper drilling into this. So Donald, why don't you go ahead and fill us in on all the details of the life and death topic that you wanted to go into?
Now, I wanted to basically take it from a larger picture, more of a lot of people believe that there's an afterlife. One of the ideas is, well, if we believe that, then does that diminish the value of our life here that we spend, you know, living? Or if there isn't an afterlife, does that make our life even ever more valuable? And the whole crux right there, the whole determining factor, is that everybody dies. Mm-hmm. Everybody goes through the death process. Some of the information that on Ascension is that maybe we don't need to go through the death process. But I'm not going to worry about that. I'm not going to talk about that, because that's just way
ooh,
out there.
Wait a minute. So, now, what did you do? You just whetted my appetite. It's way out there, and I'm going to be like, oh, yeah. I'm like that, you know, that don't press this button? And yeah, I'm the guy who's going to press the button if it says, this topic's way out there. Don't press this button. I'm going to slam it.
The palm of my hand. Basically, there's three ways to ascension, and it's basically you go through the death process, and then you end up in, you know, the afterlife. You go through the death process, you end up in the afterlife, and you resurrect yourself in the afterlife. And then the other part is you take your body where it is now through over to what would be the afterlife or the afterlife area without having to go through the
death
process.
Oh, you're talking about the ascension paths, the options, option A, B, or C.
I think we covered that in the Ascension episode or in post episodes after that. So, and that's why I'm saying I didn't really want to go too far into it, because we've covered it quite a bit in a previous episode. Going back to the whole original idea of life and death, it's just like those are two things that are very dualistic. It's like yin and yang, backwards and forwards. It's just there's life and then there's not life, and we call that death. And for me, and I think a lot of other people, when you actually start seeing how that understanding that we're only here for a certain amount of time, and hopefully we go somewhere else after we die, and then the whole death process is itself, it can be fearful for a lot of people, then, you know, it's kind of like you start thinking, wow, that's a huge impression on, for some people, and for a lot of people, how they live their lives. It's like, are you so filled with fear that meeting your end early that you don't take chances? Or are you pedal to the metal and, you know, you live life to the fullest, and wherever it takes you, it takes you. And so that's kind of where I was going.
Let me slice off that very last part you talked about. Are you in fear of what is going to happen as far as the beyond life, you know, on the other side of the veil? Are you on the other side, as they like to say? Are you so in fear of what may be awaiting you or whatever, or have you lived a righteous life according to whatever judgment is there that dictates how you live? That's what you said, right?
That's not what I meant. If that's the way it came across, I totally apologize. I'm talking about just realizing your mortality and realizing that sooner or later, you know, we're all going to croak. And if you're so filled with fear that the death process might be painful or uncomfortable, or, you know, you might not accomplish all you want, then it can really hold you back from actually living.
It can make for a bad day.
It can make for a bad life.
Yeah.
Okay. And so that's kind of what I was talking about, or meaning there.
Okay, so really it sounds to me like the crux of what you want to talk about here is how much our death affects how we live.
Yeah, and not only that, but, you know, life itself, you know, the whole idea is life and death. how those two things affect everything that we do and everything that we are. One of the ideas I had was, why are we how we are? And I'll say that again, you know, why are we how we are? And when you look at that, that's very enigmatic.
Enigmatic.
Yeah, say it five times fast.
Enigmatic.
It's one of those that you can go anywhere with that statement. It's like, okay, so we have certain needs to make sure our body stays fueled and healthy and alive and everything. But beyond that, why are we how we are? Why do we have social groups set up the way we do? Why are we human?
Well, that's a different topic than life and death.
And I know, and that's why it's kind of like a subtopic that I didn't really want to spend too much time on, but kind of like use it for contrast of for the life part of what makes life so special, what makes life so important, just like what makes death so special, what makes death so important. And the most overwhelming general answer for those is that we all experience it.
Well, you know what's interesting about that, us experiencing death, is that we all experience death, but we, with the exception of the people who've had near-death experiences, we all experience death, but we don't know that we experience death. We don't remember that we experience death. So if you're going to go with the reincarnational idea, then we all have experienced death countless number of times, right?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Nonetheless, we don't remember them. So, of course, it makes reincarnation only a theory at best for people that are in the here and now that are agnostic or atheistic, you know, or even Christian or Muslim, any of those. If you don't believe in reincarnation, then there's only one death and you have yet to experience it, not counting the people who've had near-death experiences. The interesting
part... you know, I don't think we can... I'm going to be extremely... critical and say people that for this discussion right here, you've mentioned people that have experienced life near-death experiences, you know, oh, they know that there's life after death. I'm like, well, there are some people that say, you know, maybe that's just neurons firing differently in their brain. And so,
but you know who doesn't say that?
Who's
the people
that?
Who have had the near-death experiences. I mean, they with I don't know if this is 100%, but the overwhelming majority of people who report their near-death experiences say, "Oh no, yeah, if you've been through this, you're going to say that it's not. It felt more real than life does.
Mm-hmm.
It felt more where I really was. I knew who and what I really was way more than I do or am aware of in a corporeal body."
Yeah, the only downside with that is that it's an extremely subjective experience.
But life is an extremely subjective experience. So that's...
Exactly. And that's the part of the whole topic is, if life is such a subjective experience, how do we make sense of it all? And why is it important? And does it have any value? Because it's like stuff that I find valuable, maybe you don't, and vice versa. So the act of living is basically, you know, it can be said in one way that the whole act of living is just a head dive into oblivion or death. And nobody knows.
That's a nihilistic view. That's very Nietzscheistic.
I know. And I am playing kind of a little bit of devil's advocate here with that, because I really want to explore that whole contrast between, you know, hey, life happens. And, you know, we've talked about in previous episodes perspectives and attitudes and choices in life. What it really comes down to is one thing that we know for sure is life happens. And it happens in so many different colors and variations and everything. So one thing that seems like almost everybody... and I say almost everybody because, you know, there's always exceptions to the rule, value life or fear death. And it's kind of like a two-edged sword there. It's like a yin-yang. It's like we value life or You know, we fear death. We value life because we fear death, or do we fear death, and that makes life, that makes us much more willing to live a life that we feel is worth living?
Well, yeah, but the thing is we don't reside in either place too long, I personally think, because there are times where if we truly valued our own personal life, we seem to kind of throw it away. We seem to not really do much that values it. In other words, if living a good, fulfilled life was the utmost, we'd want to take steps to ensure that we live as long as possible, right?
Yeah.
I mean, that's one aspect of it. There's many aspects. Some people would say that you have to, you know, suck every bit of marrow out of the moment, where other people say you just need to make sure that you're at the pinnacle of your health, because that's the one thing that ensures that you really cherishing your life, because you're trying to preserve it. The whole my body is my temple kind of thing that they threw around in the Old Testament. At the same time, even the people who maintain the pinnacle of health, they may make a choice where they may eat like a big candy bar, or they may go to McDonald's or whatever. Doesn't that tell you that maybe they don't, or is it fair to say that they don't cherish life because they're making a poor health choice at that moment? Is examining the value of life synonymous to examining the value of health? I mean, that is so subjective. What I think is more the interesting part of this is that the way we regard death more than the way we regard life. To me, that's even more fascinating, because death is, it's like we're trying to run away from our butt. You can't run away from your butt. Your butt's behind you no matter where you go. It's there. You're looking behind you. My butt's still there. Run faster, you know. And people are like, you're going to run your ass off. Well, that's what I'm trying to do. Well, okay. But thank you. I'll be here. We'll be here all next 2 weeks while this is being posted. Anyway, but no, seriously, when I say it's running from your butt, what it is death is there. It's going to happen. Mm-hmm. Yet we live our lives in fear of it happening. It doesn't make any sense for us to be afraid of the inevitable. Why are we afraid of the inevitable? That is the question. And like you said, sometimes maybe it's because we've lived a life of quiet desperation, maybe, or is it because we have yet to do all the things we're going to do? But we always die in the middle of doing something anyway. So, you know, there's going to be unfinished business in everything we do, unless you live to the age of, you know, 102. And even then, there's probably some unfinished. You forgot to inhale or something. I don't know. But you see what I'm saying? That's the irony of death. Death is inevitable, but yet we behave as if we can cheat it. We do everything we can to try to stave it off. Is that an old animal reflex that we're just kind of still in play? Like I say, you know, I don't remember what episode it was. It might have been the fear episode, where I said the deer is standing out there, and then all of a sudden the wolf comes, or the cougar comes, and the deer runs because it's in fear mode to try to preserve its life. And then after the danger's passed, they don't sit there and stress about it, you know, for 2 weeks. What's freaking you out, deer? I don't know. A week ago, this cougar was, you know, on my ass and it almost took me down. It's like, well, that was a week ago. What are you doing? So, but I mean, they just let it go. Once the danger's passed, they let it go. But here we are going, I could die someday. I got to make sure I have this trust fund for my children, blah, 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 you know, and all this other stuff. So that's kind of the paradox there for me.
So is that something that, you know, is completely unique to us as opposed to the rest of the animal kingdom, is being aware that someday we will die and worrying about it or being concerned about it?
Is that what differentiates us from the animal kingdom?
No, is that unique to us? In other words, do we have? Is the animal kingdom, are they always saying, oh, I don't want to, you know, a dog in the backyard of a residential home is like, I don't want to jump the fence because, you know, I might die if I get out of my comfort zone. You know, that's just an example. But are there other animals in the animal kingdom other than humans that are able to contemplate their own mortality?
Well, without being another animal, it's a really difficult question to answer. I would say anything that might have hint of sentience, maybe dolphins or such. But then again, it's how they deal with it. I personally think dolphins are way more enlightened than humans. Sorry, humans, but I'm giving it to the dolphins on this one. It's just the way I feel. probably a lot of the cetaceans, but mainly the dolphins. But for us, it's because we have this whole projection of time thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's because we know this inevitability of death. And we're not talking about the mortal soul. We're talking about this mortal coil. Because of that, we just live this way. The other animals, they're living so in the moment. They're in so much in the presence that death is such an inevitability and taken for granted, it's irrelevant to them. It really is irrelevant. But for some reason, it's not irrelevant to us, even though it's inevitable.
Okay, say that last part again.
Death is not irrelevant to us, even though death is inevitable for us.
So what makes it relevant? That it's going to happen and we worry about it?
I think it's because of what we... I think it's the... You know, actually leading and hinting into what you're saying, it is part of the human condition of creating meaning with our lives.
Hmm.
I think a lot of it is about the meaning of our lives. There are some people, and there are a lot of people that are not afraid of death. The people who are probably the least afraid of death are the ones who have died already. They're just like, oh, well, dying's no big deal. I know what's on the other side, and it's actually pretty cool. So let's go.
There's fountains and, you know, room service, free room service.
Oh, they get free cable, free HBO. That's what they like on the other side, is free HBO.
Yay, they get to see Game of Thrones.
Oh, God. Oh,
wait, I think that's Showtime. I'm sorry.
No, that's HBO, and that's not a selling point for me. I don't care about that show.
But see, right there, that's an aspect of life right there, of a pop culture series that you and I have different views on. Mm-hmm. You know, I find it, you know, a very cool and awesome story being presented in a very visually well done way, and you're kind of like meh. And I'm sure there's things that you find that are just like, oh, that's so cool, and I'm like meh, whatever. And that's kind of like the whole thing with each life. It's like nobody can say that one person's life is better than another, because we're all living our own unique life. And that kind of goes back to the whole value idea of, if we're all living life the best that we know how, then why do we beat ourselves up all the time trying to say, oh, I should be doing this. Oh, I should be doing this. I could have done that. You know, living with the shoulda, woulda, couldas, and regret, and, you know, all that kind of stuff.
Well, that's a value basis metric, and it's a basis. It's based on the society we live in. You know how I feel about the word should. People say they should because they are doing something other than something that they believe that they need to do or they ought to be doing. But what they think they need to do or ought to be doing is something that is imposed upon them. They're saying, here, I'm doing what I want to do, but I feel like I need to do something different than I want to do. So they're in conflict, you see.
Kind of like, I have to go to work because I should have a job, and I'll do that because that's being a responsible adult. But every so often, you know, roughly 2 weeks out of the year, I get to be me and I get to have a vacation. And, you know, it takes almost the first week to actually get into the vacation. And then by the time you're there, it's over. And it's like,
I think a better analogy, and it's a really simple one, is, I really should call my mother.
Okay.
Let's just use that. We'll just water it down nice and simple just for... I should be calling my mother. Well, if you're doing something that, if you say I should be doing this, that means you're not doing that because you want to be doing something else, right?
Mm-hmm.
But yet you're feeling like what I want to do is not what I'm supposed to do. The thing is really, what is wrong with doing what you want to do?
Well, if you're Jeffrey Dahmer, I think there's a lot wrong.
Now, let's stop right there. I want to talk about this because you actually, when you proposed this topic to me, you hinted to this. I don't know if you said this or if you hinted to it or if I interpreted it. If death is an inevitability, if we're all going to die anyway, why is taking another human life such taboo?
Ooh, good. I like that word. That's a good word.
I think there's a better word, but let's go with taboo.
But taboo is a pretty good word.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, I think that goes back to just our human nature, where for those that believe in evolution, if we start off in small tribes and everything, then if somebody decided that they really, really loved killing off other human beings, the tribe would end up gone very quickly in, you know, one generation. That would do nothing for posterity. That would do nothing for maintaining the tribe's history, the tribe's ideas of life and death and everything in between. All that knowledge would just cease. And
okay. Then let me throw this at you. Let's use the tribe.
Okay.
The tribe, there's a tribe of 20, right?
Okay.
And every season they go out and there are 20 bushes, and each bush produces enough fruit for each person every single day for an entire year.
Okay.
They go out there and there's 20 tribe members. All of a sudden there's 21 tribes members, just because it's the way it worked out. So now there's still 20 bushes. So if the balance of life for each of these tribe members was such that they would all die if they didn't eat this exact amount of food every single day for the year, in order for the whole tribe to survive, they would have to kill that extra 21st tribe member. So then is it wrong?
Well, we're talking about hypothetical now. Why can't you just find another bush for this 21st tribe member?
You can't.
Why not?
You can't. for the sake of our scenario, you can't.
There's just
you're trying to nice guy
there.
Your way out of this one, and I'm not going to let you.
So basically, would you take off the youngest person, the oldest person, the one that's doing the least for the tribe, or, you know, how would you figure that out? Are you saying that one of us has to go? Yeah, the tribe has spoken. You're out of here.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, dun dun dun.
Yeah, Jeff Probst is the leader of the tribe. Yeah. Jeff Probst from Survival, if anyone. For those who don't know the show, the reality TV show, reality in quotes.
That goes back to our whole idea of our whole episode on good and evil. Of we determine what is good and what is evil and what is good and what is bad from what our needs are and what we think is the best way to live our life. If maintaining 20 people because there's only 20 bushes is important and there's no other way around it, then within that tribe, the idea of maintaining that population is critical. So a new member comes in, somebody's got to go. Who's it going to be?
So then what I'm saying is taking a human life is not necessarily taboo across the board. It's taboo conditionally.
Oh, I think anything is taboo conditionally.
So, but our conversation's about life and death, and we're talking about the value of life based on preserving the integrity of the tribe or the whole of the species as it is. And yet, you know, people die every minute of the day in this giant globe we call Mother Earth. People die all the time. They die naturally. Some of them die not by natural causes, by car accidents, by cancer, by murders, by, you know, unknown causes.
You don't think a car accident is a natural cause?
I think it's a natural cause. Anything that makes your heart stop beating and your brain stop functioning is a natural cause. However, so you're saying that just for people to die, it's natural, just kind of the way the environment is set up. It's just an inevitable thing. But yet we get so freaked out about the idea of it. It's almost like we put parameters on what's right death and wrong death. You see what I'm saying?
So if you die during sex, it's a good death. But if you die at work, you know, slaving, making money for the man,
no,
then it's a bad death.
No, it's not. No, I'm not saying that at all. I'm not saying, well, maybe I am. Depends. We are talking about sex here, so I'm going to bend the... Okay. No, what I'm saying is if what we consider a bad death, you've seen the TV ads that say, I lost my sister because she was texting. And here's the one word she started to text when she got hit by the car.
Oh, yeah.
So that's a bad death. Now, this person goes to war and defends their country. For some, that's a good death. For others, that's a bad death. Yet, this person lived to 97 years old. They lived a good life. That was a good death. I mean, it's almost like the category for good deaths it's like has like three entries in it, and the categories for bad death has everything else. You know what I mean? It's like almost every way to die is a bad way, unless it's living to, you know, your ninth decade.
Mm-hmm.
Because people are like, well, you know, 60. Wow, that's so young. Wow, that's still young, people say, when somebody dies at 60. You know, and they died of just a heart attack.
Yeah.
Wow, that was that 60. Wow, that just doesn't seem that old, people say. So I'm like, oh, so if death just has its own, it's just a bad guy. It's just a bad character no matter what. It gets a bad rap, it seems like.
Mm-hmm.
When it's an inevitability. Why is it gets a bad rap when it's inevitable?
That's what I'm saying. Life happens, death happens. And it's how we, as a culture, as a species, even as an individual, all the way down to who we are, how we live our life that gives it value, and the subjective value that each of us places on our own life and the lives of others is something that is part of life and part of death. Because like what we're talking about with the tribe of, with 20 bushels of food for 20 tribe members, we've set up these whole ideas of belief systems and attitudes of, like what you're saying, what's wrong death and what's right death, because we have put certain values on what is a good way to spend our life and what is a bad way to spend our life. And I think that regardless of how any one of us or us as a whole collective, as a species, as humanity as a whole, spends our life, every single one of us is aware that we could go at any minute. There are stories that I'm sure most people have heard where, oh yeah, you know, he woke up one morning, had a pain in his heart, and the next thing you know, he was gone in just a couple of hours, and he was only 23. And we found out that he had one of those abnormal heart condition things that goes undetected in most people. And then there's other people that live to be centenarians, people that live over 100.
Yeah.
Centenarians, where they live 100 years or more, and they're like, oh wow, they've seen so much of life, so much more than we will probably ever see, because the average lifespan doesn't go that far. That's kind of where the whole idea of, you know, how much value do we put on life when we all know that death is going to happen. And I kind of like your point where it's like, then if death is going to happen regardless, then why do we make it such a bad thing in so many different ways?
Right. Yeah.
And I honestly don't know what to say to that.
You know, it's funny that Jackie, my brother-in-law, my sister's husband, lost one of his closest, well, his closest friend is from childhood way back. And he was in his 50s, and he lost his life in a train accident. He was cycling, and he got hit by a train.
Oh, wow.
And my brother-in-law was really struggling with this, and a lot of people do. They really struggle with losing somebody. And Jackie was talking to him, and we, as you know, I've talked about it here on this episode or on this podcast before. We lost our nephew, and he was 24 years old. And when Jackie was talking to him, he couldn't wrap his head around. He goes, "It just doesn't make sense." You know, he had his life going for him. He had this family, all this other stuff, and he was, you know, it just doesn't make sense. And Jackie's like, the only thing that helps me make sense of a loss like that is I come to terms with the fact that with our nephew, it was his time. It was his checkout time. It was time to go, pretty much. So she was just like, for her and for me and for a lot of people, and I want to kind of tag onto this.
Okay.
The idea that you go when you've done what you've come to do, it is solace in there. It's comfort for me. Now, when you have a whole afterlife scenario, though, where there's judgment and there's, you know, heaven, hell, Macy's, Nordstrom, Coney Island,
Starbucks,
wherever that you're sent to go after you die, wherever great or not so great places. And of course, it's always the not so great place that gets focused on. People are always in fear. What if I don't live my life a right way because I'm going to spend some eternity in some place that sucks, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, as a result, they did a study of tests of people that were terminally ill. They found that the people who believed in afterlife that had a punishment, some form of punishment, were more afraid of death than people who didn't believe in that. And but yet these are people who believe in salvation and, you know, being saved and stuff. And if that works for you, that's great. I say go with it. But if that particular belief has you living your life in an uncomfortable and fearful way where you question all your decisions, that if you're like, am I doing the right thing? Am I going to be judged by God or Allah or Humatador or whatever the deity is? Then that, to me, you're actually spitting in the face of life. In a way, I really think it's you're just put here to just do it. And if you just trust that it all is going well and that you're just like, well, when I die, it's because it's the time that I meant to die. And I'm going to into one more case and then I'll just shut up. Well, I won't shut up. It's a podcast. You know, we can talk.
Exactly. Time. That would make a really
it's we're just
boring
quiet.
Episode.
Well, you know, I can't talk too much. So let's have some dead air here. That's fun for everybody. Yay. I'm just listening to silence. It's the meditation podcast. You ready? Yeah. So the last thing is, let's say this. Okay, let's say a person, remember we talked about health, of course, you know, how healthy do you need to be, and, you know, is that a good metric for the quality of life and all this other stuff. There's a person who became morbidly obese and they are 375 pounds, right? They die at the age of 41. They die because their heart has collapsed on them, right? And people are like, well, you know how much longer they could have lived, da 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 da, and all this other stuff. What if their life experience was to experience whatever it is, the life of somebody that is 375 pounds, to experience a life of morbid obesity? That's an experience.
Oh,
it is a unique experience in and of itself. There are so many things that come with being morbidly obese that a person can experience that you and I will never even conceive of. So if they died at 41, what's to say that they threw their life away? Oh, they could have lived this and that. They could have lived this and that because of, like, what you said. They're basing it on a metric of what the society thinks is a valuable life. And that seems kind of a little arrogant to me, to be honest.
Oh, it totally is. It totally is, because you touched on it there for a minute. There, the idea of where we get, or the place that we get our ideas on what makes a good life and what makes a wasted life, a lot of that comes from religious and philosophical views. When the religious views and philosophical views that we are raised with and we're indoctrinated into from our very beginning of life, you know, basically that are handed down from generation to generation, all of a sudden we're basically bred to have a subjective value on our life, and if we're not living up to our culture or our countries or whatever barometer of that lifestyle that we should be, then it's kind of like, well, you know, taking the whole idea that you said of, you know, somebody who's morbidly obese that dies at 41. Well, let's say they're not morbidly obese. They're 41 years old, and they haven't really done anything that we consider special or important. They never got married. They never had kids. They really didn't have a job that did much for anybody. For American culture and Western society, we would kind of look at them as they didn't really live. They didn't really do anything. And, you know, they probably died because, you know, they just were done with living here in this mortal coil and having a body and everything. And they were just ready to move on in the universe. And, you know, we could take that view of it, but what if that whole idea is what their soul, what their spirit wanted to experience? And we can take that to the, you know, the whole spiritual thing. Like, we never do that. You know, we never, you know, put a spiritual philosophy or anything into any discussion we have, because, you know, the stuff we talk about does not really easily give itself to spirituality or to spiritual ideas and concepts. But the thing is, we can look at it from two perspectives. you know, the person that dies at 41 that from most people's accounts didn't really do anything with their life, maybe they did. Maybe it was important. Maybe that experience of, you know, kind of having a rest life, a life of rest, where they didn't have to do as much, they didn't have to be going out and getting as much, was their whole life plan. And then, you know, your example of somebody who dies at 41 who's morbidly obese, it's like, yeah, they could have lived probably till another 30 or 40 years if they would have just taken care of themselves. And it's like, well, maybe they were living totally out of their design for their life to have that experience. And that's where the whole value and everything and the whole idea of with death, you know, it's kind of like, well, if you're living a life that you don't value, then change it.
Yeah.
if you're living a life, if you're constantly going around saying that person's wasting their life, oh, that person's, you know, using their life good, that person did a good job on with their life, it's like stop pointing the fingers to other people and saying and rating how well they've done with their life, and turn those fingers around and say, how am I doing with my life?
But wait a minute, isn't that in its of itself doing the same thing? I mean, for us to say, it's like I'm always like, you know, am I being judgmental when I don't care for people being judgmental? And then does that make me one of those people? So if we're sitting there saying, well, this person, you know, stop pointing the fingers and telling how everybody else to live their life and then fix the way you live your own life. Well, who are we to say that?
Oh, I didn't say fix your own life. I said rate your own life.
Well, but who are we to say that they should? We're shooting them. I mean, so what if they're going around and, you know, casting aspersions on everybody else rather than their own life? You see, if that's their template, if that's their experience, then it's their experience to have, you see. But I think that as we go through life, and the death factor, I think, is part of the impact on the other lives. I think it's the death factor. It's like whatever we're here to experience.
That sounds like
do,
a game show.
The death factor. It sounds like one of those dystopian kind of games. You know, Schwarzenegger, I'm sure, stars in it, the death factor, somewhere.
Coming to Fox this fall, the death factor. Starring Justin Bieber and Lady Gaga.
Dead. I can't do a Schwarzenegger accent, so.
I'll kill you till you're dead. I can't do it now because I have to warm up with
now
that
you're
one.
Trying. Yeah, exactly.
Because if you don't warm up with it, then you overdo it and it becomes just bad.
Yeah, it's hackneyed. Yeah.
Yeah.
Hackneyed Schwarzenegger. Yeah. It's kind of like so. Wow. I had the analogy. It was great, but I didn't get out in time. Timing.
Oh, no.
Timing is everything, and it was not to be in this case. So.
It died a premature death.
Yeah, it did. And I'm really sad. Well,
it didn't even see the light of day or the sound of this podcast.
As it were. It lived its destiny, but, you know, now we can criticize and judge the life of that that analogy that didn't make it. Well, that analogy should have exercised more.
So, it should have had more chutzpah and forced its way out to be said before it dissipated.
But now let's do this. We are talking about people, their lives being compared to the metrics of society. But yet we said earlier, what is good for the society is what gives life value, right?
It's one way that life can be valued.
Now, here's the thing about American life, though. And I want to speak because you and I both live in the U.S. And American life is something in and of itself. It's this – people are like Americans are overindulged and there's just too much and we have excess and we take so much for granted. But that is the richness and complexity that is born out of American life that gives rise to – I mean if we've been given all this freedom, maybe part of the byproduct of that is – dying while texting and cancer and heart attacks and serial killers and all this other stuff. Maybe that is, you know, the human consciousness finding as many forms of expression as it can. It's like, oh, I've got so much freedom now. Now I could express myself in 10,000 ways instead of just 1,000. And then that gives rise to creating another 100,000 ways of expressing itself. Maybe it's this kind of fractal that's exploding upon itself of just human expression. We've found so much freedoms. We found, you know, the 10,000 ways to die now. Maybe it's just this crazy magical way of expressing ourselves. Maybe that's the byproduct of this. Did I make sense?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Ooh, yay. Yeah.
It made sense to me. Now, I have a question for you.
Let's hear it. Go.
Is it possible to have a body, an animated body, that is not alive or not having a life but having an animated body? And I'm not talking about vampires or zombies or anything like that. It's kind of like the whole idea where...
Is this our Halloween episode?
It might be.
It might be, which is really bizarre. I mean, we didn't even Halloween it up. We didn't. But yet we're talking about life and death and, you know, the undead's in there. Life and undeath. So, go. I'm sorry. You said zombies and vampires. Yeah. So.
I'm not referring to zombies and vampires.
Okay.
Or the undead. I'm talking about people that, by all standards, should have life in them, but for whatever reason, you don't see a spark of any soul or spirit or life. They're just animated.
I don't. They're like a robot. You need to give me an example, because I don't know anybody like that.
Oh, you've never met anyone like that, where they just seem like they're a shell that's just going through the motions of having a life, but they're not really alive.
Well, I've seen people like that. I've seen people in those cases, but you know what? It always seems temporary. It always seems like a phase. It always seems like there's something they're going through. I mean, I've met people that were just very blah, but I can't say that I've felt the spark of life from everybody I've met.
There are a few people I have not felt the spark of life from.
Really?
Yeah.
What is that? What's that all about? Did they just they seem like they had no personality or no joie de vivre or what?
Being an empath, I have to do it from that perspective. You know, when you're in a room with people that there, it could be a classroom, it can be the DMV, the Department of Motor Vehicles, for all I care. You have kind of a conscious, unconscious sense of the people around you that are there. Mm-hmm. These people that I'm talking about, you did not feel anything from them. You could not get anything from them. There was no more life coming from them than there was from the candy aisle.
Now, let me ask you this. Were these people that you knew, or was there anyone that you described this way that you had regular contact with?
Oh, no. Normally, I met them normally through a friend of a friend of a friend, temporarily, and maybe a little while in the future, but it's extremely difficult to be around people that don't seem to be people.
Well, how do you know they were? I mean, here we are. It's take the red pill and anything goes. How do you know they were really people? How do you know they weren't some kind of crazy simulacrum or, you know...
This is what I'm saying.
How do you know that they weren't actually... Somebody perceived somebody that was not alive. Of course, then again, non-corporeal people have an energy.
Mm-hmm.
So you're saying that these people were almost like animated human meatbags.
Let's put it this way. If they stood still and I closed my eyes, I could not feel them anywhere. When I close my eyes, I can sense where people are. I have an idea of, okay, there's a person there, there's a person there, there's a person there. Because it's almost like everyone that's alive gives off, well, one way to look at it is they give off a tone. They give off a note, a musical note. And this is just the easiest way for me to explain it. If someone that's not alive, they don't give off anything. They don't give off any sound whatsoever. So if they stand perfectly still and I can't hear them, you know, with their feet walking on the floor and I can't hear them breathing, then to me, they're no more alive than whatever they're standing by. And if that's a inanimate object, I can't tell the difference.
So now what you asked, what about people like that? What about people like that? Where was the question
exactly
leading to? What is this in reference to?
It's where do we define life? It's kind of like if we have life.
We only define life by the relativity of being human. Because rocks are alive, but we just don't think they are because we're at a completely different vibration than them.
And this kind of goes back to value on life. If somebody does not present a spark of life in one way or another, and they just seem like an animated meatbag, as you put it, then does their life still have value, or are they more like a machine, like a car or something, where it's just like, well, I used that car for 2 years, I have an emotional attachment to it, therefore it has value? Or does their life have value? And, you know, if so, where's the contrast between their life having value and where's the stopping point where the line is drawn between when is a life not a life, and, well, I'm just going to leave it there. When, if possible, is there a, can, you can have a life that is not a life. You can meet somebody who is animated, but they have no, there is no life there.
Well,
if that makes sense.
Okay, it does make sense. And what we have to do is we have to go on the assumption that this is a human being.
Okay.
I have to go on that assumption. And maybe, well, no. We have to go on the assumption that they were born of parents, for example, or that they have relationships with people. If there is anybody in this world that cares about that person, then that person has value.
Oh, but see, that's still a subjective view.
Exactly, but it all is, and we determined that earlier in this episode.
Exactly, exactly.
I mean, if you're the only empath in the room of 20 people, and they're 20's the number today, I don't know what that is. But if you're the only empath in a room full of 20 people looking at this one person, this animated meatbag, and you say, well, this person's not alive, they have no value, and the other 19 people are saying, well, the person has a pulse, you can't just kill them because they have no value. You see what I'm saying? It's irrelevant. I mean, I think maybe your question is lending to, what about the essence of life and what you're doing with that life that you've been bestowed with?
Actually, it was a very long setup, because if serial murderers and serial killers see people in that way that they have no life, then, you know, the whole subjective value of the culture of, you know, is that life important or is that life not important, then that becomes part of the example that you were going with.
Wait. Let's back up a second. And we got to be careful not to tangentialize this too much, because we can get really twisted up in serial killers. But you made the assumption that serial killers did not see their victims as alive.
That's why I said, what if they see their victims in this way as not alive?
Well, see, there's that whole pop psychology idea that the serial killers dehumanize their victims. But I don't agree with that.
But at the same time, it goes back with your analogy of, or with your example of, if we're all going to die someday. I like the idea that people say, he died when it was his time to go. That's kind of like, you know, I found my keys in the last place I looked. To me, it's along the same lines, and I know that sounds really, really bad.
No, actually, I like that. I know what you're saying with it, so keep going.
For a lot of people, that might sound really, really harsh, but it's like, he left when it was his time to go, like, as
you're saying, it is what it is.
Choice to go at any other time. Okay. Yeah, it's like, did he have a choice to go at any other time? It's like, look at that. It's my time to go. I don't think I'll do that today. You know.
Yeah, I know what you're saying.
We do have a lot of choice when how we live our life, and there's also a lot of choice of when we end our life or how we end our life.
Yeah, it's a moving target, like I say, but it's a target nonetheless.
Exactly, exactly. And so
I think how you live determines how you die.
Oh, okay. I agree with the statement, but I'm curious to hear exactly how you mean it.
You and I believe that we have a certain set of experiences that we are wanting to have that we determine before we're born.
Mm-hmm.
And I do not believe that we know everything and that anything knows everything. I don't even think God knows everything. I think God has an idea of everything, but doesn't know everything. Sorry.
So God's just basically rolling the dice and seeing.
No, no, no. God, well, yeah, in a way, God's kind of wanting to be surprised, you know.
Because it'd be really boring if God never was surprised, right?
Well, it's same for us. We want to be surprised, but we're little pieces of God. So, you know, it's all wrapped into that. But
oh man, we are.
Oh, yeah, we're kind of touching on all sorts of things. But
if we haven't pissed somebody off in this episode or really made them go, "Oh, I can't believe they said that," what? We're not doing a good job with this episode.
Well, yeah, there's a lot of things that we say that I'm sure a lot of people don't agree with and and shake their heads. So no. And actually, that's kind of cool. I like that. Because if everybody agreed with this episode, it would be not a very good podcast. It wouldn't be very good, right?
Yeah.
But no. So what were you asking me about? What? The okay,
it's kind of like
we're talking about predestined life.
Oh, predestined. Yeah, okay. Yeah.
You and I say that we come into life, you know, wanting to experience certain things. Mm-hmm. It's the moving target, and what we do is I think we create a scenario that we're born into, and that locks a lot of things in. The experience you have from childhood till when you become of age, when you become adult, when you kind of start becoming your. When you've locked it all in, who you're going to be, you've really limited where you're going to go from there to a great degree. You've got a lot of room for flexibility. Let's use the term, let's use race. You're born as, let's say you're born an Asian person, right?
Okay.
In America. Now, your experiences can vary, but being Asian is locked in. You see what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. And you can vary those widely. It's not like you can only have one experience because you're Asian. I'm just saying that you are limited to not having a black person's experience.
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying. So as a result, there's all sorts of things that you've had kind of set in stone as you've grown up. And depending on how well you adhere to those or break out of those as you continue through adulthood, that's what changes the moving target. You see what I'm saying? So it's like, okay, death A is if you stay in that pattern. Death B is if you break out of that pattern. If you break out, you're going to, you know, it's B1 or B2 or B3, you know. So maybe you'll die in March. Maybe you'll die in April. Maybe you'll die in May. Maybe you'll be hit by a sedan. Maybe you'll be hit by a van. You know what I'm saying? But so I think it's like that's why I say it's a moving target. You know, yeah. I think it's set in stone. You've got, you know, a set number of possibilities of the way you're going to die. And as you go through life, kind of weeds out some and kind of enforces others.
Okay, now I'm curious because is it ever possible in the whole history of existence? And yes, I'm going to this level that somebody's life or ended before it was supposed to. Or lived longer than it was planned to be. In other words, with the example you just gave, you know, it's kind of like, okay, your time ends in point A, and that's, let's say, April, and point B is 3 years later in May, and point C is, you know, 2 months after that in August.
Yeah.
Is it possible... If those are the set times that are planned out, it's like, okay, you're checking out between this time frame right here and here.
I think so. I do think so. I think it's possible to check out before the 11 a.m., you know, checkout time. You checked it out at midnight the night before. I think it's possible, sure.
And what kind of implications does that have, or does it have any?
Ooh, that's a really good question. Wow. well, you know, that's a really good question. I think well, it depends. If you're a follower of mediums, I don't know if you follow mediums and the readings that they do, but you get some really good, interesting information. There are the ideas that people have contracts, that one person was lined up and set up to take another person's life. That was kind of an agreement they made before, you know, pre-incarnation. There's that idea of thought. But then there's also ideas of thought that this person died sooner than they were supposed to. And it seems like it's the exception than the norm, but it does seem like that does happen. And I think when that happens, you kind of get a reboot session and you come into an incarnation with a whole different set of plans. I don't think anything in this world is 100% set in stone. I think it's a moving target. And that's where the target was way off. The target got way off. It changes how you're going to incarnate completely.
For me, if that's possible, then that goes in with anything is possible. Because if you're able to change your the time frame, you know, between your of your death that you'd planned out before you incarnated this time, then you're able to change almost anything, if not change everything.
Well, you'd have to be able to be cognizant of everything to change everything.
Exactly. So are you saying people that are cognizant of their life path, their life, the length of their lifetime, and they find a way to either accelerate their death or to lengthen their life? Are you saying that they become conscious of this and that's how they're able to do that and that's why they're the exception?
No, I don't think so at all. I just think that I think life is designed to be full of surprises, and sometimes you get a surprise like that. You know what I'm saying? I think that you go into life, let's use the example of a woman who was her life was taken by her husband who was abusive. And let's say that the intention was to get together with this person to learn a certain set of experiences because they had a pre-life contract. The abuser and the abused had agreed to kind of be lesson learners for each other. They didn't agree to take the other person's life. That wasn't part of the agreement, but it just kind of happened.
Mm-hmm.
See, that's where it escapes me, and I don't really understand kind of how it works this way. But I do believe that there are things that kind of step outside that. But I think it's part of a greater matrix. I think it's part of a greater... It's almost like, you know what? Yeah, it's not the way I plan to go, but because of the current of the human conditions in this particular society, in this particular day and time and age, this is just the way it goes. You know, it's a kind of a confluence of events. There's free will that constantly takes place, and I think free will is just it's the one thing you can't trump. So you almost have to go back and redo those things to get them. And I think that's where karma all comes into play, is when you've taken free will and you've kind of stepped beyond the bounds of what the agreement you made is and the person's life is taken, then karma gets carried into other incarnations. And that's what I think builds up karma more than anything, is when you start breaking pre-incarnational bonds.
Or... another option, another possibility is, let's go back to your analogy of a tribe of 20 with 20 bushes, where the tribe is all of humanity here on Earth, and a soul wants to come in because they're going to be perfect for moving the Earth, or moving the consciousness of humanity in a certain way. Let's nice. Say somebody big like Buddha. I'm going to bring Buddha back. Or actually, I used Buddha last
episode. Actually, I think Jesus is a great analogy
for
that.
That's where I was going. Nice. I was like, I used Buddha last episode. Let's use Jesus this one. So, and basically, only 20 people can be in that tribe. Only so many people can be on the earth at one time. For whatever reason, if we're going with that idea, then if you say... you know, on a soul level, maybe, you know, probably on an unconscious level, that, hey, I will shorten my time frame, my life span, so that this person can come in and be here at certain times and move the consciousness of the human of humanity along a little bit. That's an idea too.
Mm-hmm. Oh, absolutely.
So,
yeah.
So, and I think we're going to have to end on that note for the most part, because I don't know. I'm going to have to re-listen to this episode. I don't feel like we really talked much about life or death, but yet we did.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we did. There's a lot of stuff in here, and it's really deep. It's the kind that you kind of have to let soak in a big way.
Yeah.
It's just this, it's the kind of conversation. I mean, there's concepts here that I never really even entertained until this conversation. So yeah, this is kind of episode. It's a soak in episode.
Yeah.
It's not a takeaway episode. It's a soak in episode.
Yeah. And that's what I'm saying. It's like with a lot of our episodes, it's like, we're talking about conspiracies and we're talking about aliens and, you know, do they exist and do they visit Earth? I'm like, okay, that's what we're talking about. And here it's like, we're talking about life, we're talking about death. Well, we mentioned life and we mentioned death and we mentioned some things about them. Was that really what we wanted to do? And it's like, we were so general with the topic, it allowed us to go anywhere and everywhere that we wanted to go.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So there's part of me that's like, I don't know if we really talked about, you know, life and death. And like, and then there's the other part, like, we totally, you know, talked about life and death. We could probably go on for another 2 hours.
Oh, easily, yeah.
So, or longer, who knows? But I think we're just going to end it right there because we are really low on time. So David and I would like to thank all of our listeners for taking their time to listen to this episode. And if you're a first-time listener, we hope we've expanded your mind and gave you a little brain food for a little while. If you're a long-time listener, we thank you for your patronage, and we hope you look forward to our next episode and have enjoyed this one.
Absolutely. And we do invite you to visit our website, taketheredpillpodcast.com. All our episodes are posted there, and we have show notes on that give you links to some of the things that we've discussed in this episode. Also visit us on Facebook, facebook.com/TTRP podcast. Yeah, we're actually on Twitter as well under TTRP podcast, so you can actually subscribe to our Twitter feed. And we really encourage you to let us know what you think of the episodes and what you think of what you talked about. Even if you think we're way off base, we want to hear about it. You can actually email us from links from our website as well.
Cool. So for Take the Red Pill, I am Donald Dalton, wishing you to live your life ultimate and don't fear the Reaper.
And I'm David Deere. As an old Klingon saying is, may you die well.